是一起放松的。I'm James Mthethwa, member of this committee from KSN.
Morning, I'm Nomfred Dabula, member of the committee.
Good morning, Shahid Iso, member of the committee.
Morning, I'm Oitsile Motlhatlhobing, I'm a member of the National Council of Provinces and a member of this committee.
Chair members, I'm Peter Gabin, the PLO Home Minister of Defense.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. I'm Kavuro Karisti from PMG.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members. I'm Salim Babagamunshi from PMG.
Good morning, members. Good morning, Chair. I'm Chapelo Petra from ANU Caucus.
calling all the members to get and put them all together. Thank you, Sally, for the
Good morning, Chair. My name is Marco Schmidt. I'm the PLO from the German consulate working for the German embassy.
You said you are a PLO. So many PLOs from Germany. Nice. You're welcome. Well, I am still busy with the introductions. Honorable member, you came at the right time.
Thank you, Chairperson. Kubas Murray, member of the committee.
Thank you very much. I think it's all systems go seemingly general. Can we kindly get a presentation?
What can Mr. Dolby's presentation? I would like to take this opportunity to just give you a brief picture of our current deployment in the DRC, sir, if you don't mind. We are in DRC deployed as part of the UN under the operational code MONUSCO, and we have what we refer to as SANDAF SPEC, which means South African National Defense Force Specialist Contingent, which comprises of air cargo handlers, a medical evacuation team, the military police, the cargo handlers, as well as a firefighting team. Alongside, we are also deployed as part of the Force Intervention Brigade, which has got elements of the aviation with five Oryx helicopters as well as three Rafales. And we've just withdrawn an element which was a squadron, engineer squadron, that was at the direction and the decision of the UN. So in a nutshell, we are part of the Force Intervention Brigade, which is an initiative of the Southern African Development Committee, but equally we've got agreements with the United Nations to support that, what I termed SANDAF SPEC, as well as letters of assist that governs the deployment of the helicopters. So having said that, it would be my wish, after Colonel Steydom has presented, to also paint a picture for members of Parliament to understand the circumstances and the conditions under which we operate, especially the Force Intervention Brigade. To me, that is important, as you intend to visit that department, so that you've got a complete picture of the circumstances. And then I think then with that you'll be well orientated to understand even briefings that you will get during your visit. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Over to you, Colonel. Now you can sit down.
honorable members of the committee, Colonel Pistar and Rashi, thank you for the opportunity to give you this presentation on behalf of the Chief of Joint Operations. Notwithstanding the fact that we acknowledge the receipt of your correspondence in this regard, just for those people, a little bit of background on who we are, where we come from, and why it's we that do this presentation and not some other department. Thank you, sir. The presentation will be done in two parts, sir. One is regarding the correspondence that we received from you, and the other one is from previous correspondence where the Commission asked us to come and brief them on the requirements that they must adhere to or fulfill before a visit to the mission territory meeting. And the two candidates were over what administrative matter. I must stress that this is an information brief to the Commission regarding the visits to the DRC to recover you. Find yourself in the situation of the deployment in the DRC. More tactical and nuts and bolts presentation will be done in mission area during the visit by the company commanders and the battalion commanders on the ground. Just request that questions and answers in this two-part presentation be done after each part before we carry on to the next. And in public consumption, because of security reasons, certain things cannot be made public, dates and times of visits and where we're going to. For that reason, we ask that the information, the sensitive information, remains restricted to that house, please. The scope of the part one, so we give you the background, we tell you what the mandate, vision, and mission is, why we do this. Peace support operations in Africa that comes from the joint force employment objectives. We will look at the peace support operations as it is at the moment. There was a request to say something about air assets, equipment, finance, human resource, sexual exploitation and abuse. And then we'll come over to questions at the end of part one. The joint operations division, which General Machoy is the chief of, was established on the 1st of August in 1997, to conduct all operations in accordance with the interim RSA Constitution, and it was sanctioned by the subsequent RSA Constitution. The mandate, vision, and mission. The mandate of the secret ops is that he is responsible for all the joint force employment as directed by the Chief of the National Defense Force. The joint operations vision is to ensure the successful joint interagency, interdepartmental, multinational force employment, which we also refer to as JIM. Our mission is to determine what capabilities would be needed that the SANDF has in order for us to fulfill our vision and our mandate, and that is to do successful joint force employment to JIM. There are three joint force employment objectives, which might be some old news for some of the people, but the blocking group, the promotion of regional and continental peace and security and stability in support of government initiatives, is the joint force employment objective from which we will deploy and successfully exercise the JIM and the employment thereof. We look at the peace support operations in as it is currently. Again, just reminding us on the joint force employment objective of promoting regional and continental peace, safety, and security and stability. Currently, there are in the Sudan under the UNAMID deployment 6 staff officers and 7 MILOs. Just mentioning that those are some of the forces that deployed. The emphasis of the rest of the presentation will be on OPMISTRO in the DRC, which the Commission is envisaging to go and visit. There is one battalion with 3 subunits, 1 support company, support elements, staff officers. UJVM is officers that are doing some verification, and 4 MILOs.
The first intervention brigade, a resolution was passed that the previous battalion that was deployed as a framework force would, the mandate would change to go over to offensive operations, whereby three infantry battalions would be deployed because of the reoccurring risk of conflict in the East in DRC. They will function under the force commander with, to neutralize the armed groups with three priorities in mind. The protection of civilians, to stabilize the Eastern DRC, that part of the country, and the implementation of peace and security and cooperation framework within the DRC. Our framework forces, which the chief has already alluded to a little bit earlier, Sandro Speck, who will give some breakdown on what, who they are and what they do, is the one grouping, and the other grouping is the composite helicopter unit comprising of five Oryx helicopters and three Hoypark attack helicopters. The force levels that are deployed currently in the DRC, first of all, we will speak about the FID, the current moment. This is five South African infantry battalion, with the HQ in Sake, the tech HQ is in Mambiri, the support elements of 159 people are spread over Sake, Mabibi, Maya Sake, a company in Mubudzi. Thank you, sir. Kananga, Mwente, and Tichu. B Company in Maya Sake, Erengeti, C Company in Mabibi, Zumbai. The Reki Pelotu in Mabili and Sake, Motor Grouping in Mabili Sake, Yasafi, Mujumbai Mai, Serengeti, and Mujumbai. This is a very vast area, sir. And if you get to the mission area in your visit, you will get more detail on the time and distances between the two. In South Africa, we work according to a certain doctrine in which area a battalion would be responsible, a good area of responsibility. Because this is the UN operation, sometimes we are forced to act outside our South African doctrine because of time and distance and the area of responsibility. Our aviation element of 143 people, sir, it's a flight crew, the protection team, and the ground crew, they are all situated in the airport in Goma. Sandor Speck, the HQ in Kinshasa, cargo handlers, the Goma, Babuku, Kinshasa, Bundi, Dungu, Kinshasa. This is a lot of names which will be given to you more detail at the, so that you can get the distance and time. The military police, we have got them in Kinshasa, Bunya, Dungu, Beni, Magadi, and Kebe, which is a part of our cargo handlers, and they give the protection there. Then we've got aircraft firefighters, should there be problems at the airports and crashes in Beni. Four operational emergency care orderlies, which is part of the medical team. The AMED, which is a forward medical team that is deployable within the ability to do air evacuations in Beni and Goma. Then the EJVM, this is the Expanded Joint Verification Mission. It's people from Defense Intelligence, which does some verification, and it brings the total of our deployment currently in the DRC to 1,129 members. Just a broad footprint picture, sir. If one looks and knows that the DRC was at one stage the largest country in the continent, geographically, if you look at how every flag you see on the map, we've got a footprint of a South African soldier on that place. Some of them more than one grouping, and some of them are just a team of cargo handlers, it might be. Just to give you an idea of how vast the command and control is that the contingent has to look after. The air asset does not belong to the FIB itself. It is a part of a force that is belongs to the United Nations. South African helicopters, we've got five Orange helicopters, which is medium transport support helicopters, and then the three Rooivalk attack helicopters, which supports all operations in Bristol, so not necessarily just the South Africans. Our equipment. Our equipment status is severely affected by the intensity and frequency of use of this equipment, especially in high-intensity operations. The impact of the weather and the terrain, which you will later see in a few pictures and will be alluded to more by the chief when he addresses the commission, has a severe impact on the life cycle of the equipment. The United Nations does COE inspections, as they call it, country-owned equipment. They measure our serviceability on that, and we then take that, all the defaults that we might have had there, and we try to maintain them and get them up to serviceability again by employing a maintenance and a rotation plan. As far as finance is concerned, at the height of the RSA involvement in the DRC, in the times of the M23, when they were still very prominent in their activities, the division's allocation for OPMISTRO was just over 1 billion rand. The current budget allocation is at 875,303,327. United Nations payments. We have received a large amount of payments from the United Nations through letters of assist. We've received 733 million rand, memorandum of understanding. That's more towards soldiers and HR and food and what accommodation and things like that. We've received 208,911,027 rand. There was a letter that has been promised to pay, which has been activated, and it's been in the process of being deposited into the reserve bank with the international transfers, which does not reflect at the moment, but it is in the process, and because it hasn't been converted to rand, we still just have the US dollar amount, which is 5,908,565 US dollars. UN payments. There is currently a team in New York, as you might know, that are busy negotiating the letters of assist to the United Nations. And these letters of assist will be expiring in November of 2018 once approved. In deliberations with these teams that go over to the United Nations, the United Nations has also agreed to settle outstanding payments as soon as there's a reallocation of budget process, which is busy taking place in the year, has been completed. Just something on the funding of the operations, the letters of assist. Of the five Orange helicopters that I've said we've got in the DRC deployed, only three are funded by Treasury. This thing makes a very simple calculation that two of them are not funded and it's been carried by the DOD. The three Rooivalk helicopters, not one of them are funded, so we also carry that burden. Then on the memorandums of understanding, the more the HR stuff as I've alluded to, National Treasury funds all these and all the revenue that comes back from the wind regarding that goes back into the revenue fund. It does not come to the end. We look at OPMISTRO, it's a United Nations mandated deployment. That means we actually give our soldiers to the United Nations to take charge of them, not who always command, but they charge of them, and they are then subjected to United Nations policy and regulations. Efforts from the South African side is to align our current HR policies with that of the United Nations for deployed members because of the impact on morale, the duration of the long deployments, to make sure that these people have the same leave benefits which they would have had they not deployed, which is in line with UN prescripts and not necessarily something that we would have given them if they did not deploy. On sexual exploitation and abuse, What do we do about this to prevent it, sir? Before the people deploy, they go for mission radiation and striking, and this is a specific subject on its own, where the members are lectured and educated on the do's and the don'ts about sexual expectation. The matter is also addressed during the legal presentations that take place during the same mission readiness training. And in future, following this big thing in the social media about the latest allegations of sexual exploitation and harassment, legal undertakings for members not to commit crime will be signed by every single member that will in future deploy. Notwithstanding the actions taken by the United Nations, all the allegations are also investigated, irrespective of whether they're done investigated by the United Nations or not, by the GMC and the Operage team. Currently, following this outcry on social media, there's a very high-profile military police and a legal team currently deployed in the DRC to investigate the latest allegations to see what happens with the outcomes. Should it warrant any charges, there will be a court martial held in the mission area to address the perpetrators according to the letter of the law. On discipline, morale, sir. Morale is not a constant variable. I can't tell you today that we've got a very great morale and expect that to be the same in a week's time, because it's very much depending on the situations, climate, and the rain, and the conditions of the living situations that people in the DRC, you will see some changes regarding that, which has a great impact on morale. Although we in general are of the opinion that our discipline and morale is of an acceptable standard because of the involvement of the commanders, the senior NCOs, the chaplains, and other key personnel that are with these people from day one during every stage of their deployment. We also sent up multidisciplinary teams, not permanently deployed, but we sent them up at intervals to then assist members to debrief them and to contribute to higher morale. These include people like social workers to make sure that they are happy, that their houses are happy when they back home while they're deployed, that their focus is on their job and not their house, psychologists and chaplains, to mention a few. We also support and encourage constructive legitimate utilization so that when the people are in rest, that they're not bored and doesn't get the situation going into them, we also give them the legitimate utilization equipment. During our star business of our principal at the General's Division, everything possible is done to maintain the prime mission equipment which the people need for them to do their job, because if they've got the equipment to do their job, we can expect them to deliver an output. If this is the case, this also is a very morale boost. There are some pictures and a little bit on the circumstances and the areas in which our people deploy. So, if one looks at the bottom two pictures, this is typically the area in which our troops do patrols. That is the road sector. This is where the deliverance are, where they have to be sought and looked for, where they have put their temporary bases. The belligerent grouping sets up camp under this triple canopy of leaf. You won't even see it from the air, but the aircraft, if you pass right over them. That's the density of the forests. But General Fachwana will look at that more. On the right-hand side is typically something that could happen on the lava islands that we have, and the ash that comes from the volcanoes, which is still very prominent, and when the rainfall comes, it floods, and it creates a kind of a mudslide, and this is then covered in the terrain in which we then have to die. The road is there today, just tomorrow it's gone.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thanks to the administrator. I just want to add on his presentation just to create context and understanding. The first thing is, when we deployed as part of FIT, honorable members will remember that the M23 had just threatened or taken over the city of Goma. And SADC then decided to constitute the Force Intervention Brigade. And the negotiations took place in the UN because its framework forces could not intervene or do anything to cover their face. Then they accepted the Force Intervention Brigade to deploy under the auspices of the UN. And then we did a sterling job. I think the history is on our side. We crushed the M23. At the time of the deployment, UN staff officers in the city of Goma in eastern DRC were getting allowances, what they term danger allowances, of over $180 per day. But when the Force Intervention Brigade came, those allowances were taken out because there was security. Then FIB, in the context, was not this adorable light force because it took away opportunities for certain framework forces or members, because they would get that $180 per day. So the deployment of the Force Intervention Brigade has been not really supported or well reported about by the whole framework force. I'm not saying cases that are reported of assaults, torture, and sexual abuse have not taken place. But reports that are reaching or that have been sent to New York are over-exaggerated, thereby undermining any good thing that the FIB, by FIB, I'm not talking South African, I'm talking Tanzania, Malawi included, have been not well reported. This is an issue that necessitated a double troika of SADC plus the Force Intervention Brigade troop contributing countries to do an assessment. And I was part of that assessment. We visited Congo. And we then picked up some of these challenges and were able to put them and communicate to the UN authorities, both in DRC, the special representative of the Secretary General, but also through the SADC Secretariat, this issue was discussed where the ICGLR, that is Intercommunist Dialogue in the DRC, composed of all those countries, plus SADC, had a meeting with the Secretary General, the current Secretary General, where they put their issue of protecting the Force Intervention Brigade. Now, that meeting took place last year, and again this year we were in New York to make a follow-up on some of the issues. Now, I want the members also to understand that against the whole force of MONUSCO, Congo has put a plan which they call the drawdown plan of MONUSCO. The Congolese have sort of prescribed to the UN that by this time you must reduce this type of number. And now, but once the Congolese say that, the Congolese are saying the Force Intervention Brigade is a preferred force to depart out of Congo lastly, after all UN troops have left. But internally within the UN systems, what they are doing with this drawdown plan, which they comply with, because it's prescribed by the communist government, they are now targeting FIP. FIP should be the first one to go out, not the framework forces. I'm painting this picture so that then you understand that we are there, we are doing an excellent job, and we've got the support of the communists, and SADC supports us, and we have placed this in the agenda of the United Nations as a concern where they are targeting the FIP, because the FIP is the only force that has got the mandate to conduct offensive operations that are aimed at neutralizing the negative forces. Whereas the broader force of over 15 or 16,000 people is just purely doing patrols. They are not involved in any offensive operations. Now, having said that, it is planned early this or later this week or in 2 weeks' time that there will be a visit to the DRC by SADC and the UN authorities, because we challenged the UN that if then our adversary or our competitor or enemy is the negative force, and the estimate is around 4,000 to 5,000. And then we've got a force of MONUSCO amounting to over 16,000, notwithstanding what we did by training the Congolese, ourselves and Angola. I think we trained about 5 brigades and Angola also about 5 brigades. If you take these force levels and what we perceive to be the destabilizer of 5,000, then it begs a question, why do we have such a big force and we seem not to be making a headway? So during our engagement, we then challenged the UN that there should be an assessment, the one that I'm saying will take place very shortly, where we go on the ground to do an assessment. What, and then answer the question, what do we want to achieve in 2018, this is the year where Congo must conduct the elections. And the Congolese government has formally also requested SADC to assist with reinforcing their ability to make sure that the elections do take place this year. So whilst we're in New York, we then challenge the UN that with your force levels, with your budget, ourselves as SADC, with our Fourth Intervention Brigade, with the support of the Congolese government, the three of us should visit the place with one purpose, go and assess and chart the way forward, what do we want to achieve in 2018. So hopefully this pending visit will really change the situation, because one cannot ascertain that there will be free and fair elections where all Congolese have participated in the elections if the Eastern Congo is not stabilized. So I just wanted to paint that picture. Remember, the Fourth Intervention Brigade is not the darling of the UN. It's not the darling of the UN. But it is the only force that has got the mandate to do offensive operations in a country 3 times bigger than South Africa. What Colonel Stadium presented to you, if you look at those flags, it looks very easy. We're talking of distances of over 2,000 kilometers apart at times. The same battalion of ours, if you take the southern part, we've got a command there, but the commander is situated at the north. This is outside our normal operating now most of the numbers are we are here. This is the South, where currently there's instability emanating from the local population attacking the government, killing police. And unfortunately so, just shortly before General Mukwege was withdrawn as the force commander, he's the one through the MONUSCO that the president comes on. We're against this, but we are not in charge as South Africans as to where our troops deploy and how they are being deployed. The battalion commander is somewhere here. Now, how does he ascertain that they are well supported? This again does answer some of your questions, the moral. But our troops, with communication and visit, we try and revive their moral. And as far as possible, we make sure that we replenish their prime mission equipment. But equally, we have what we call SAF, the South African Defense, or South African Defense Force Institute. That we take food and stuff and all the amenities that are required, we send them there. This is just part of boosting their morale because they get all those whatever at the normal price that we sell in South Africa, not at the DRC price. And again, this also helps us to bring control rather than our troops going out to buy certain stuff. They get it inside the bases. But as I'm saying, not all our current deployments have got such amenities, because at times the deployment comes at very short notice. But our aim, as it stands together, Tanzania and Malawi, is that the Force Intervention Brigade should be co-located in Sake in somewhere here. We should move away from this penny packeted deployment, but it's not only us. You've got Malawi in a company base, you've got Tanzania in a particular place. Probably you would have heard of the recent killing of the Tanzanians. And it really touches me because I visited where they were deployed. And it's in a thick forest, no civilians are there, then you wonder why the Tanzanians were put there. Because normally you'd hear the UN saying we are deployed in protection of civilians. Now there was, or there is, a vital route, I'm told. There is a bridge which was swept away by a flooding river in the past. And then the UN engineers were sent to repair that bridge, and then the Tanzanians were to protect those engineers. But when the attack took place, the Tanzanians were 3 years in that area. There were no floods, nobody was in danger in that bridge, but the Tanzanians were there. And it is a very difficult terrain and an area to defend yourself. Hence, our common position as FIB is that we insist that the Force Intervention Brigade should be unlocked. By unlocking, it means wherever we are, we should be pulled out. Then the framework forces, Pakistan, India, Nepal, and the rest, should go and take those positions and allow the FIB to be co-located where the FIB can protect itself. By protecting itself, it means we'll have our engineers to build the defensive positions, we'll have drones that can allow us to see 2 to 3 kilometers what is happening before we attack, because we are really worried. We told the UN that this is a situation that we will not accept, where our troops are put in isolated places where they cannot support themselves. So I just want to paint that picture. But this does not mean as South Africa, we want to pull out. No, we are still committed. We want to help Congo to stabilize the Eastern DRC. We want to help that country through the UN, through SADC, to conduct the elections. So I just wanted to add that, maybe allow questions. Thank you, Honorable
Chairperson, General. Honorable members, before we go to, because there is a part two of the presentation, we need to mind that. But I would like to thank the General. Honorable members, you have had the presentation and the edition detailed by the General. Our troops are there in TRC and then and are doing a very good job. So, over to you, Honorable Members, with questions. I'll start with you, Honorable Murray.
Thank you very much.
I should be going further. Another help.
Thank you very much.
You want this, thank you. Over to you, Honorable Murray.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for the presentations. Obviously, this is the first one of this nature that we are getting. And I think there's a certain perception of us, and then there's the reality. And I think that is a kind of exposure that is critically important for us to fully understand what is going on. And there should actually be more like this, and that's why I think the visit to the Tacoma will be critical, because then you can see and experience it like it is there. I must first start by saying I think we fully support our troops, absolutely. And in my opinion, it's also very important to make sure that there are not a destabilizing migration down south. So, you know, that's why our involvement in the DRC, in my opinion, in terms of peacekeeping missions, is very, very critical. Because we know that if that's a container, can very easily migrate down. And we know that currently we do not have a conventional warfare threat close to our borders. And it's probably because of involvement and, involvement of the defense force in Congo. There are so many questions that one can ask, and I think probably more of these will come to fruition when we are there. And it will make a lot more sense than by asking that. Just again, and excuse my ignorance, you know, if I ask questions, because I mean, you know, like even things like FIP, you know, we're not used to that abbreviation. So, you know, the force intervention brigade. Just quickly, the it's not only South Africa that is involved in FIP. I just want to again understand who's involved in FIP and then when our troops are deployed in the Congo, are they deployed and positioned as a group of South Africans, or are they in mixed into others? Because that is also one of the things that might impact on the morale. You know, if you are a lot of friends together, you can say, you know, let's make a pot of pup and let's talk around the fire and we boost our morale. But when you are with strangers that don't understand your culture and your language and things like that, then, you know, it certainly might affect. So I'm asking that just to make sure of that. How long at that time are our troops employed or deployed in the Congo? How long? So in other words, you know, because sometimes that has got an effect on morale. You know, how do you deal with troops when they've got problems at home? And also with discipline, do you send them home for a certain period and they return? Or must they stay behind and just be concerned about what is going on back home? That certainly has an impact on the role. The one aspect that has been reported to us in the past, and that was the serviceability of our equipment. And we know that the serviceability of our equipment has got an effect on the refund from the United Nations. And I think that is very important, that we know what is going on, especially with our preparation for our visit. Because eventually, it is no use to have our troops in a condition where you haven't got the equipment to support them. In terms of vehicles, in terms of aircraft, in terms of helicopters, in terms of, you know, if they are the force intervention brigade and they have to, and excuse my terms, chase the bad guys in that terrain, do we have the capacity to airlift them and drop them down? And when they are finished, to go and pick them up and bring them back? Because by chasing those guys in their own territory might be very, very difficult, and once they are finished, wherever they might be, just to come back through that terrain again, just back to base, might also be a challenge. Those are the things that we believe that one must consider. So also the roll down plan that you have referred to. You know, what is the practical implications of that roll down plan? Is it that, you know, all troops must be out of DRC by this year or by 5 years, or, you know, what is the practical implications of that? I want to just get feedback with regards to the helicopters. If I understood you correctly, the Oryx and the Rainbow, which I believe is now being withdrawn, and certainly has got an impact on the refund from the United Nations. Was that totally out of the control of the South African deployment and totally under the UN? And what are the reasons for the withdrawal of the RAFOC? That would be my questions for the moment. Thank you, sir.
No, thanks, Chair. Morning, everybody. I'll try to be very brief and to the point, Chair. When South Africa embarked on this peacekeeping mission, there have been an objective. Now we see that there was initial deployment of people and later a deployment in terms of the presentation before me here. Now, my question is, in terms of the initial statement that I made, there should have been an objective why there was peacekeeping intervention that was undertaken by the captain. Did we achieve what we intended to do and what necessitated a further deployment? If the initial deployment achieved indeed what was intended. Chair, on issues of discipline, and it would relate, let me just go back to it, it would relate to the human resource that we have deployed, the equipment, the support that you are giving, is it in your view enough to keep your objective to be achievable. In terms of discipline, you know, I'm very worried about the sketches that the examples that are given. A young boy goes there, 17-year-old, steals, and from the front force. It may be minute to me, I'm not in the force. But then maybe we spend more to attend to that matter for that 17-year-old on page 3 on the discipline. And when the example that you also cited to me, very minute also, very minute, and I'm saying minute and mind my language, I'm saying I do not understand the circumstances that are confronting. We have a woman gave birth and we characterize it as sexual abuse, whatever, in terms of what I'm reading here, threatening misconduct related to sexual abuse. And then under it, you gave an example of a woman who has given birth, and no circumstances are highlighted to us to get a picture of really what happened. Was this woman raped? You know, sexual abuse may mean a lot of things. What happened, there was consent, the woman gave birth, and all that. You know, we are in the dark. There's a woman who just said, there's a woman who gave birth, and to the extent that she wants maintenance. It's a normal process. There's no abuse, in my view. If this thing, some of the many things could be clarified, you know, the gravity of the matter, if it warranted to be characterized as you, this is really a misconduct. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think you want to raise a few concerns and why certain perceptions are created, in the sense that, one, if the UN is in charge of operations, they appoint, of course, different heads of different countries to take responsibility for UN forces. But it falls also under joint operations, which means South Africa must also be represented if their forces are part of that. And in the planning of any offensive or planning of operations, there has to be due consultation. It cannot be imposed only from one particular person. And particularly if the terrain is not well understood and people are making decisions that are foolish, which will cost the lives of soldiers, then they are not fit to serve on joint operations. So I don't know exactly how does it operate and why South Africa takes the position that the UN has a certain view and they put certain camps up where it's not suitable. What intelligence has gone into that? And how can such a foolish decision be made at the expense of those Tanzanian soldiers that died? Secondly, the issue that was raised in our discussions previously, Chair, was the issue of the PME, the prime mission equipment. Is the equipment suitable for the terrain? We have a number of countries involved which have different conditions where they come from. South Africa goes over with its own equipment, and the equipment is not always suitable for that terrain. Why do we set our soldiers up for failure if the equipment is not suitable for the terrain? Why don't we use the equipment of another participating country that is more suitable? And who actually looks into the suitability of equipment for the conditions of the terrain that they have to, of course, traverse during the patrols and also during the attacks? The other one I want to know is air capability. What's the problem? We know what happened in Car at the expense of our soldiers. Are we committing the same error again by removing the Oryx and Falk, where air cover and even we have to, evacuation needs to be done of certain people? Are we removing that and leaving our soldiers now at the mercy of a terrain that is not suitable? So the South Africa has of course deployed equipment, which is your 5 Oryxes and your Falk, and it's not funded. How was that decision made? Is South Africa prepared to take the extra burden of the cost attached to it because it has to protect its soldiers on any of these FIPs and things that are happening with attacks, and the UN doesn't reimburse? How is decision made in that regard when equipment is actually deployed and sent from South Africa to the DRC? In fact, there's other equipment which we still need to get reports on, which is from Sudan, and also the actual withdrawal of the SA troops from Sudan, the final withdrawal from Sudan. We'd like to know also, but not at this occasion. It's DRC. Let us focus on the DRC. The other one, which is a concern for me, and that is that when you deploy troops anywhere in the world, in South Africa, we only have continental deployment, which is, of course, on the continent of Africa, and generally between anything between 1 hour and 5 hour journeys are covered. I would like to know if it's realistic that when we say we deploy troops for more than a year, when we know men cannot be away from their wives or their partners for between 4 and 6 months, why do we set them up for problems when we know that that is a natural inclination of individuals? Why don't we look at the system of rotation as a verb and prevent such things from happening? So we actually create a problem because of our policies and how we conduct these operations and missions. And we are speaking about social workers, psychologists, you can take everybody in there. There's a natural attraction between men and women, no matter where you come from in the world. So are we looking for trouble? Or are we taking the necessary precautions and have a realistic policy that rotates forces to minimize the issue of sexual exploitation or abuse or anything of that nature? The other one, of course, is we also said that military judges must be appointed and deployed when we have cases. And I heard about a legal team that has gone over. I know there's that support of investigating matters. What about our military courts and the court martials that we speak about that's supposed to take place in the DRC, not in South Africa? And if somebody's pregnant for 9 months and gives birth, which means it didn't happen yesterday, last week, it's been happening for 9 months. There's been an affair with somebody. So somebody claims, and it happened with also our previous exiles, people that were in exile in the liberation struggle, as men and women, no matter where you come from in the world. Which means there are many South African children born from South African fathers in different countries where they were seeking refuge and where they had, of course, external operations on the apartheid regime in South Africa. We have it still today. So I just like to know, what are we doing about, what is the military judge's issue? When we do make a comment, Honorable Chair, we say it is exaggerated. I appreciate that some people may want to abuse the situation and paint a picture of South Africa in a negative light. But any word like exaggeration does not deny the fact that there is sexual abuse. There is abuse taking place of torture and things. Regardless, even if it's one case, it needs to be dealt with effectively. And if a soldier has committed that, he should be blacklisted and never be sent on a mission again. Why do we do that in our school system for teachers? We have them blacklisted, we have them deregistered on the safe register. They cannot teach in school, they cannot be in touch with children to protect our children. And that's very important for the missions that we send abroad, that South Africa wants to have a very positive image, because it's beyond that we go. We are discussing about how can we go into bilateral agreements and arrangements and develop the economy and also have other relationships with those countries besides just establishing peace in that country and stability in that country, but also to exploit the opportunity of bilateral also in the interest of South Africa's economy and its national interest. I think that would be fine at this stage. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Good morning. My question is around the policy itself, the human resource policy. Because in this presentation, we are being advised that there should be an alignment of the policies in accordance with the UN. But here is just indicating that there are efforts. We don't know whether is the policy there already or when is it expected to be finalized and for how long has this been happening. And then the other issue is around the funding itself. There are three helicopters that are deployed currently, and the two from that side, the two are not funded. So, to me, it's a problem because how do they manage those helicopters if they are not funded? Where do they get the funding to ensure that they are being taken care of? So those are two concerns about the budget itself. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. We need to be mindful, like our table one honorable minister was saying, some of the questions will be relevant when they are on site. We are still going to DRC. And this time I must assure you members that the world is now among our problems. We need to go and see our soldiers deployed out there. If you are listening to the presentation, they are saying our soldiers' morale. It's not that it's low, it is high. So they are doing everything to keep the morale of the soldier high. This gentleman sitting here and the soldiers themselves, the captain spoke about the doctrine that at a certain point in time the doctrine will change because of natural conditions of where the soldiers are deployed. So, in terms of the period of deployment, we also need to be mindful. By the way, even if we do receive the letter late from the president, but let us be honest to ourselves that we do receive that will stipulate the amounts that taxpayers are paying. And it was once alluded that the UN is not sometimes coming to the party. So we know some of this. And I have the general now touching the most issues in terms of the international politics, you know, saying, you know, the UN has been told of what to do and what not to do. So as the country, I believe, we are trying so hard to keep this peace mission going. And truly speaking, we don't have money. And the UN is also not coming to the party. Can you answer some of the questions, General, asked by your
Chairperson? Okay, Chairperson, just before the question is answered, there's just one thing that I've slipped. My apologies for that. And it's quite important because it deals with funding and the allocation of funds. It was mentioned that at the hype we were given, or the allocation was just over R1 billion. When was that hype? And then when you look at the progression or regression that has taken place, do you take into, what is the index, if I can use that phrase, that you use to look at your costs? Because it's not CPI. Don't tell me CPI, because that's a basket of food. It's not military and military operations. It's probably not less than 20%, but that will give us an indication of the real problem. Not the nominal values, but in real terms. Because, you know, the R1 billion 10 years ago will equate to about 3-4 billion rand now. So if you then look at the nominal value, then you see actually the big problem that you're experiencing. And that will give us a full context, I think, of the challenges that you're experiencing with regards to finance as well.
Thank you. Over to you, General.
Yeah, quite a number of questions, but I will try and cover most of them. On the issue of the funding, let me start there. The funding of the unfunded too. We have five OXs plus three ROFRs. Not all of them are flying throughout. It means probably three of the OXs will be serviceable and do the UN job. And the ROFRs, they do not operate one-one. They operate in pairs. So the third one is the reserve that we keep. If one is not serviceable, then that one would pair up with the one that is serviceable and conduct operations. Now, the UN pays for that. We are being reimbursed. Now, which means the ROFRs are deployed as a system, not aircraft or frames individually. It's a system. It's a combat system that we have deployed and they reimburse us as such. The call to withdraw them is because of the costs involved, the money they pay South Africa. They think they can source other helicopters elsewhere cheaper. Helicopters that works not as pairs but one-one. But the truth is, there is no replacement for a ROFR. It has proven itself, and even in the UN, nobody can disprove that it is a vital asset. Because if you take the Mi-24, it flies 2 to 3 kilometers high up, and whatever it does, whether it fires, it cannot really make a good impact on the ground. Now the ROFR can fly technically even at a tree level. I just want to clarify the issue of the ROFR. Now, two, yes, the UN has written to South Africa showing that by such a time they would like to withdraw the capability of ROFR. But I did allude of the engagement of SADC DRC with the UN. There is this visit that is planned to take place. As we speak right now, there is no withdrawal of ROFR. Only this assessment that will take place will confirm whether we are going to do that. But they've understood very well. If the ROFR is out, no more offensive operations against the negative forces, because the artillery of Tanzania was withdrawn. Now, if there's no artillery, there's no ROFR, then what means we are sacrificing our troops, and we told them. So hence they've accepted that there should be this assessment. So I think on the issue of the utilization or the deployment of helicopters and the funding, I've explained. The issue of the court martials, we have always deployed court martials in the mission area because out of experience, we realize if we try cases here in South Africa, we lose them. There are no witnesses. So if you send a military court into the mission area, there are always successes of trying those members of transport. What is this sexual exploitation and abuse? And honorable member, I do take note of how you understand it. Unfortunately, so the UN says zero tolerance. There can be no love affair of a peacekeeper and the person who seeks peace, that is the citizen of a country that is destabilized by war. Whether it is out of consent or what, it's not accepted. It's not acceptable. So the sexual exploitation and abuse is standard of the UN, and it is prescribed to all peacekeepers. And as such, we as South Africa cannot say no, there was a love affair. We have to enforce that. And deploy the troops. Whether there is an allegation, the UN will do nothing. They simply report on an allegation. And that is why it becomes hard for us. Remember, we've got also our country laws. If there's an allegation, we cannot say the member must no longer withdraw. It means there must be a due process where the member, there's an investigation, there should be a formal charge, the member must appear before a court, and the member cleared or found guilty. So we have to do that, and we periodically update the UN and say, out of the reported cases, a court martial said, and so was found guilty and has since been dismissed. Please remove that case against the name of the Republic of South Africa. And again, please, we are honest when we handle this. Other countries do not even report these issues. And some people, you find if their members are incriminated, it's handled quietly. But we are honest. We report all these cases, be it through a secret, be it an allegation, we do that type of an investigation. And then also, there is a process that we follow before members are deployed. Not everyone wakes up and says, I'm going to Congo. We've got what we call the concurrent health assessment process that looks at your health situation. We've got also the process where in our legal system verifies that members that have been deployed don't have the previous records of either misconduct or whatever. We've got our own intelligence that must screen that whole force before them. Yes. Not to say that we are 100%, at times one or two cases slips through, but whenever we discover that so-and-so had a previous case or a record, that's why we say repatriating that member back at home is a command decision. We always say a deployment is not a right, it's a privilege, because you are representing the Republic. So the commander has got those powers. Once we discover that so-and-so slipped through the system and is gone, we return them and we replace it with somebody else. Now, what is FIP? The FIP is a force intervention brigade. It's composed of South Africa, Malawi, and Tanzania. Its origin was these three countries. It is established by the SADC, the Southern African Development Community. It was decided at its foundation that it was not to be these three countries. Other SADC countries were supposed to play a role, but today it is only this three. And I speak out of knowledge, because I was in Tanzania, that the three are equally still committed to continue whilst we handle this issue through SADC to get other regional role players to be part and parcel of this. That's why we are protective of the FIP. Yes, they're deployed under the UN party, they carry the mandate and the expectation of the region. That's why we are able to make those inputs. Why are we deploying for 1 year? Yes, 1 year, previously we used to deploy for 6 months. But the UN changed its stance and said they can no longer rotate troops every 6 months. They said if you want to rotate your troops every 6 months, we'll only pay once a year. The other 6 months you'll pay as a country. I'm sure none of the members will agree with me. Resources are what limits us. And then we have to change and make deployments 1 year. But equally, not everyone in the mission deploys for 1 year. Our pilots, they are deployed for 2 months. And some medics, But the troops, those infantry guys, those that fight the war, unfortunately they prepared for a year. And some specialized contingents such as some aspect. And in this
point
one,
of clarity, point of clarity, just on the point, I wanted to just establish the link, since that point is raised of people, of soldiers that only are deployed for 3 months and they send back. With the occurrence of the sexual exploitation and reports coming, are there any of those within those categories that are returned every 3 months on that rotational basis? Compared to the military, the army guys that stayed there for 1 year, or the cases coming most of the from the army side.
Let me start there because I'm forgetting. I'm letting most of the questions. The problem that confronts us is. Concurrent health assessment is not everyone who deploys because of health conditions. So it means the frequency of utilizing the same troops now and then for the same missions is the problem. And if I've deployed in Congo, it means I make friends. I am known. I go away after a 1 year passes, the other year I'm back in Congo. Then it means I carry on with my habits. Now, the same can be said. Not to say it's only the infant that has got cases of abuse or misconduct. Air Force members are equally, despite that they deploy 3 months, but it's still the same people because we are recycling the same people. I think that's the biggest challenge that we have. The same as the doctors. So it's not a question of 1 year versus 3 months. I think it's how we enforce, make sure that we train, we become not tolerant to this type of behavior because it is a UN requirement. And again, I want to say, it's not to say people have been raped. No, it's a relations, but by virtue of the UN policy is not acceptable. And as such, also the opportunism by the locals, if then you report a peacekeeper that he is the father of my child, at times they are hoping to get sympathy and get money. But most of the time, yes, there has been cases of our people being involved. Some will tell you, I will marry the lady because truly at home is not married, but still it is a sexual exploitation and abuse, and it is a UN standard and it is not acceptable. But we are addressing those issues. Then the prime mission equipment suitability. Members, we all wish to be like framework forces, where we park our vehicles, start them, or go down the market here and come there to say, then report that you've done a patrol. And come month end, the inspection takes place, then your vehicles are serviceable and the country gets money. The truth of the situation is, the framework forces and us are two types of forces. Those are not involved in offensive operations. We are involved in operations. And the situation or the conditions where we are deployed are very, very much adverse. I can buy brand new cars, deploy them, but within a year, half of those cars will be unserviceable. Not because we don't care. We are doing our level best. Hence, this is an issue between SADC and the FIP, that is force intervention between two contributing countries between itself and the UN. We want to say, how can you measure me on the same standard as a framework force that doesn't go on combat and reimburse me with the same skills whilst I use my equipment in high intensity operation. It is an ongoing negotiation. Currently, the C34 is taking place. They are looking at some of the policies.
I think they are giving us more details than necessary. I've said to honorable members, we are going to be asking some of the questions when are they? Can we at least go to the second presentation that deals with that?
This brings us to the part two, the visit requirements and the general information that somebody should know about before going on to such a visit. And this is now more the tourist part of it and not the operational part of it that we can achieve that way. The aim of this meeting is to just brief the audience about
it. Sorry, can I work it, is
I think that this is more on the tourist part and being the visitor.
We are not going to be tourists.
No, definitely not.
The honorable members are going to the oversight.
Yes.
So let us use the words correct.
My apologies. The aim of this presentation is to brief the audience about the visit requirements and the general info on the planned tour to the Democratic Republic of Congo, which is DRC, to visit the deployed members of the SNDF. Needs don't arise from time to time for different people to visit United Nations deployments. For those who need to visit the deployment of the RSI forces for official purposes, need to adhere to certain requirements before such a visit can be made. The following will be addressed. The UN authority that would be required, travel documents required, funding of such a visit, travel arrangements, medical conditions or medical related information, accommodation of the visitors to the DRC, and then liaison and admin officers that will be involved in this process. In order for the Joint Operations Division to apply for a United Nations authority, we first need a letter of request that has been approved by our principals, be it the Minister, be it the Chief of the National Defence Force, approving such a visit before we can request any visit to the United Nations from our side. In this letter, the objectives of the requirements and the expectations of the group that will be expected must be made visible so that we can use that to write up or get to an itinerary which we must discuss with the United Nations regarding in-mission area transport. The period of the visit, in other words, how long you would like to go, the dates envisaged for this period, which we have at this stage and that is available at the time. And then in this letter it was also stated that it's funds available from the visiting group to pay for the visit to the DRC. And also then on the means on which the delegation would like to travel to and from the DRC from South Africa. It is our suggestion that if the budget does allow us, that such a group request us to assist them in chartering an aircraft for the whole group, but for the account of the visiting group and not for the Department of Defense. The following is required by the United Nations in order for us to get authority to deploy a person, and this they require 6 weeks prior to the date of departure. A detailed name list of the delegation that includes their ID or force number, their title and rank, the initials and surname, the gender, passport and the number, and an attached copy of that must be sent to the United Nations. The expiry date of such a passport, then contact numbers like office and cell and email numbers. funding unless otherwise instructed in writing. The Joint Standing Committee on Defence will be responsible for the payment of the following: the domestic travel from Cape Town to the port of entry to the DRC, and that includes the flights to and from the DRC, the accommodation in the DRC, the meals that will enjoy in the DRC, and the allowances should this be payable. Travel documents that would be required: valid official or diplomatic passports, yellow fever immunization certificate, and a valid visa to enter and exit. Yellow fever is a World Health Organization requirement, so that is imperative, and people, that's it. The customs officials in the harbor of the port, health authorities, and the DRC is very keen on checking that. The DRC is a declared malaria area, and the members that are visiting are encouraged to please go on malaria prophylaxis, consult their medical physicians on this regard, and to follow the prescripts of whatever medication the medical practitioner would suggest to use. Each deployment site waiting for a mission will have a medical facility, and they will then manage only emergencies should this be required or become necessary. Members are to ensure the following: to bring along their own chronic medication, should they have any, things like tablets and insect repellents, and also sunblock to protect yourself from the environment. We suggest that you only drink portable water and not tap water, and this you must also include in your own personal budget. Wear appropriate clothing to protect you from the sun and mosquitoes. A cap and a hat is very, very advisable for both of them. And please take note that whatever the medication you decide to take with you will be for your own expense. Travel arrangements, although we will be happy to assist from the Joint Observation side, all travel arrangements from your point of your home to the point of exit, be it Waterkloof or be it our tango, whatever the case might be, will be for the joint, for the commission. But I say again, we could probably be involved if the decision has been made by our principals that it will be funded by the DOD. Until such time, on the arrangements, please. In country, the Joint Corps Division Managing Officer will cooperate and speak to the United Nations. And that's where the itinerary comes to play. That's what we need to put your exact objectives for, to make sure that there's available aircraft for means of travel within the DRC in the mission area. That will be done and will be part of the United Nations experience, and not be for the cost, and not be for the mission. When returning from South Africa from the port of entry in the DRC, same as going out, we will be happy to assist if we become a partner in this. If not so, then it would be for the Commission's own arrangements. On accommodation, the Joint Force Division Liaison Officer will assist in making reservations at hotels appropriate in co-located in the areas which you would like to visit. You will obtain a quotation from these places of accommodation and present that to the Commission for approval before he confirms the booking. The individual members living in the hotel, however, will be responsible to fund their own account, their accommodation, beverages, and food enjoyed at the hotel. The Joint Force Division will make two accompanying officers available to accompany the Commission on the visit, and this will not impact on the Commission's budget at all. The Department of Defense Liaison Officer is called Aubrey McClung. That is his details. He is the link between the Parliament, the Commission Secretary, and the DOD. And then the guy on the ground that actually does the work is Colonel Moorcraft at the Joint Force Division. He is the Liaison Officer between the Division and the United Nations and the mission area. That's the person to speak to. That is all I have for you, sir. Open for discussion.
Thank you very much, Kenneth. And Deco, what will be your role in the whole?
Thank you, Chair. With regard to to Togo's role in terms of the visit. We can look. The embassy is based in Kinshasa, and we can assist and facilitate should there be any requirements from the committee in this regard. And should the committee require any assistance, I think through our office, our parliamentary liaison office, we'd be able to assist. What we have prepared for you today, if the committee is keen on hearing this, but I think it's perhaps the briefing that the general provided, provides you with very specific information regarding the South African presence in the DRC. We have, if the committee is interested to hear, our general approach to UN peacekeeping, some of the concerns we have, but one of the key issues that perhaps should be noted is that the mandate of MONUSCO is due to expire at the end of March. So currently the United Nations Security Council, of which South Africa is not a member, is considering a renewal mandate. So in the context of a visit in the coming weeks, it should be taken borne in mind that the Security Council in New York is considering the mandate renewal and the future of the UN operation in the DRC. In this context, some of the dynamics related to that is the issue of, on the one hand, there is a sense by member states that MONUSCO needs to continue its work, particularly in the current situation in the DRC. We know about the transition to the elections and the timetable out, and some of the challenges, security and political challenges, that the DRC faces, that MONUSCO plays a key role in this regard. MONUSCO's key focus stems on two legs. Its one leg is the protection of civilians and the stability element, and the other leg is to assist with the transitional arrangements, with the political process, and that includes assistance with regard to the election. So those two key issues remain, and it's a very crucial year, as the general indicated. So there's a sense that MONUSCO should continue for that period. However, the other challenge, on the other hand, is that there is threats to UN peacekeeping from specifically major developed countries who are concerned about the high cost of UN peacekeeping. MONUSCO is an easy task. It's the largest UN operation there is. The UN has various peacekeeping missions. They have 16,000 troops deployed worldwide, but MONUSCO is the largest, and in a way, is the test case for the effectiveness of UN peacekeeping. So when it comes down to cutting budgets, often MONUSCO is looked upon as the place to cut the fat in a way. This happened last year, despite calls from the African Union and the Southern African Development Community for MONUSCO's mandate to remain and for the troop numbers to remain. Due to pressures from some permanent members of the Security Council, MONUSCO's troop numbers were cut by a few thousand troops. This year, there is that possibility again. It's something that we have been trying and we've been lobbying through the UN to resist, that we've been arguing that this will send a negative message should the international community be seen to be withdrawing its support or any political message that it may be sending through that way. So I think this is something that the committee may want to keep in mind, that in the context of any visit, there is this political discussion taking place on the future of UNESCO. Related to the mandate were the issues pertaining to the role of the SID, which the general alluded to. So that's basically. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deco. Honorable members, honorable body.
Given the description of what we have now outlined, how do we structure the visit from South African parliamentarians? We're not soldiers. That's why the chair was saying we're not there to come in to tourists. We've got a political goal. And how do we structure that? Because I can hear what soldiers are saying. I've seen that experience.
then you just go and talk to soldiers about their conditions. And then the political problems that you're invested into. You see us as parliamentarians playing a particular role, or you see us behaving like soldiers walking around, looking at the dead and kissing up children and going to come back home. The other challenge is the alternative that soldiers sometimes do when the stability, re-establish themselves among communities and sometimes order or engaging with the communities around the election. I know that experience. I've seen it happen. South African soldiers say, vote for so and so. How do you help us in this particular environment? And how deep is one of our own soldiers in political problems that happen in the DRC? They do take sides. I know that. They do advise that as communities can vote for the president here, that doesn't report for him. How do you expect parliamentarians to behave in that particular environment?
Thank you. Honorable Jesus, your hand has up before the honorable.
Thank you, Chair. I'd just like to request, I think, for the committee's sake, that we have an update on the political transition, because in the long term, if that stability politically is not done, we will have FIPS and we'll have the Monastos, we'll have them continue for years and years and years. So we'd like to have an update exactly on the negotiations that are taking place and the settlement, and is there settlement in the near future? How many years will it take? So from the SADC side, from the Monasco side, from the ministry side, we'd like to have an updated report on what political processes have taken place to find a solution to the problem in the DRC. Thank you.
Chairperson, the last presentation was good. Some of that was already known to us, the information has already been passed on to us. Now we get to the point where, so what? Give us the practical arrangements. You've given us, if we need help, I mean, it's 3 weeks to go. If there are now still questions whether we are going and whether there are improvement and whether the principal has done that or whether Durko is going to, whether there's a need, then we can just cancel the trip now. It's three weeks to go. So if there are not practical arrangements in terms of our visit, please tell us that. But if there are practical arrangements, please tell us that. Convey to us. But why must we be in kept in the dark on these things? I mean, it's us that you're talking about that will be involved. Please give us the arrangements or whether there are arrangements or not. I find it a bit frustrating. You know, I mean, we cannot now...
Take it as work to the answer. It is our duty. They are going to facilitate. Ours is to instruct as members of parliament to say we are going to DRC, make those necessary arrangements. Therefore, the question by the honourable point, please. Good answer.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I think you're quite correct in relating to this. And facilitate it from the logistical perspective. That is a process that we will liaise with the committee on. We are here from the on the political side to provide you with information and context to the situation in the DRC. I think the one thing that has been raised is the issue of what is our perspective on and a political briefing, I think, is something we can definitely provide in terms of where the situation is right now. What is the assessment of the overall political situation in terms of the transition, the lead up to the election, the timetable, some of the challenges that we see in Kinshasa over the last few days, the political stability in Kinshasa, etc. The one thing that we are stressing in terms of the UN peacekeeping mission is that it's not the be all and end all of the political process. The peacekeepers are not there to bring about peace. In terms of a political long-term settlement. The peacekeepers are there to facilitate, and peacekeeping generally is there to facilitate and to ensure that peace is sustained. But the big picture is that there always has to be a political process. And this is something from the political side we've been stressing. Peacekeepers are not the answer to bring about peace in a particular situation. And this over-reliance of peacekeepers is sometimes detrimental to situations, because the key should be that there needs to be some kind of political process. With regard to the DRC, you have an agreement on the table. You have a comprehensive agreement. You have that has been put on the table with a timetable for elections. The sub-region SADC, including its organ on peace and security, as well as the African Union, has been engaged in terms of ensuring that there is the parties are engaging and moving towards this final settlement. And as I said, we will provide a briefing to you on that if documents are required. We've not been requested to do this, but this is a request that we will take back, and we will do that. But the question that was asked about the neutrality of peacekeepers, when we deploy troops in the DRC, they are neutral. They are part of the United Nations process. We are not seen to be part of any or partial to any political party or any political entity in the Congo. That UN peacekeeping and UN presence in any political situation or in any country is there to be a neutral facilitator to ensure that the mandate is maintained. But any partisan approach would be detrimental to the international community's engagement in that process. Thank you.
When we learn who takes responsibility, is the soldier, or is the embassy, or is the political head of that particular country? Who takes responsibility? Who has got the parameters of engagement? Is the soldiers from South Africa, or who? So that we do know what question to ask who. So that, because, I don't think you are subjected to UN laws. We are not. And that difference should be quite clear. You are politicians from South Africa coming to visit our own people and want to come and engage them in the situation. But there are political questions that have been given, and South Africa is a country is playing a particular role. So I want to get clarity from you, quite clear, who are we accounting to when we land, and who will give us the political answer before we go? And if we have picked up certain things, who do we talk to? You can't give orders with the soldiers. There's a commander in chief in South Africa who doesn't take responsibility. But who do we engage politically with our own observations? That's what I want to understand.
Thank you. Are you prepared to answer this question?
Thank you, Honorable. I would advise first that your first point of call should be Kinshasa. It makes good diplomatic or political cases. You don't just go to the ground, you start at the headquarters. The representative of the Secretary General is based in Kinshasa. Our embassy is in Kinshasa. Meet our ambassador, get the brief, get to know what is happening. I think that would be my advice. Second, whilst I'm not volunteering in terms of payment, but it makes good sense that let the military organize for you. I'm telling you, the embassy, DECO, I don't think they can do the way like Roots do. We could charter, we could waterproof, we'll arrange everything, how it will be received to that side. Your appointment with the embassy, the representative of the Secretary General, we can all facilitate for them. Up to when you must now leave for Goma. Remember, once you are in Goma, again, the UN will not cover you completely. But if we are involved, at times we will take those Oryx headquarters where the UN was not paying for the, those hours you prefer, but facilitate your visit, so your visit is a success. I would recommend seriously that they probably put it to our minister that the Defence Force should facilitate your visit to the DRC. It's not really a trains machine. Thank you.
Thank you very much. This will be the last two hands. Honorable Isel.
No, Chair, I think what is missing in the forum, the question that has been asked now by a few members, is actually what is the actual itinerary, what are the actual logistics, and when can that be made available to the members? At this moment, we have an idea of what is expected, but we have no firm arrangement in place up till now. There's no itinerary from A to Z and coming back to South Africa. How soon can that be done with all the necessary details attached to it? Thank you.
Are
you firming up, Chair? They're asking you to firm up the matter of consultation program. That's what I'm going to ask.
Okay.
Are you saying to us, we are the responsibility of the SANDF from day one, from water course, to arrive there, and all our day-to-day operations? The police of South Africa got nothing to do with us. Well, they sometimes are there, they appear, they also have to some authority and place a particular role. DARCO will meet them there, they have to talk to us. But coming to facilities is not what DARCO can say in the office. Or they don't have that underground there. They can treat problems themselves and treat expectations and see if it's a problem and DARCO doesn't come. It talks so nice that it's talking there, but there's no sense to by DARCO. That's what has to go with facilities. I know that confusion. We arrived in Kinshasa, and we're supposed to now know who's talking. The record talks very nice, but when it came to who is taking us where, given the congestion of traffic and everything, the record was not available. There couldn't be anything to be accepted. So I'm just informing us, I'm saying to us what the strength of general to full responsibility has told us, leave all these other people.
Thank you, Honorable Pali. I'll give you a chance, Bamsani. Chair, thank you very much. I'd like to pick up the point from Lieutenant General Lachoy in his intervention. I think our view is that the Joint Standing Committee on Defence and Military Veterans is the responsibility of the Minister of Defence. And therefore, once the Minister has received your letter and approved it, the responsibility then instructs the Chief of the National Defence Force, who then instruct joint operations to arrange your visit. I think what Honorable Boy is saying is correct. They will meet, you will meet the UN representative in Kinshasa under the tutelage of their government. It's a political thing. We don't get involved in that, but we will be there as facilitators. Once you've done that political discussion with UN rep and DECO, we then take over from the DECOM. And your itinerary is run by your defense force in its entirety until you come back. Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much, Honorable members, a letter has been written to the minister. So we are just waiting for the reply.
Can I comment,
in our discussion with her early in the week, is actually confirmed that the facilitation of your trip should be done as soon as possible. I think the letter should have gone to the chief's office by now, but she's confirmed that she's taking your visit very seriously.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. And honorable members should be understood that this, in as much as DOT will be involved, it's our visit. So, on the part of Parliament, we've done the necessary arrangements. Thank you very much. Without much ado, I'd like to release members, 12 members, I suppose, to fly back to different provinces. Thank you very much, General Lady Wemterich, and thank you very much, honorable members, to honor this meeting. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.